Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Gary Morgan's Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. I am coming off an excellent week of being a Pirates fan and somebody covering the Pirates. I mean, how often can I get to say in my 2 or 3 years of writing about the Pirates that most of the fan base was pretty positive? I mean, it's an Easter egg. It really is. So we had a great time talking Pirates last week, just building up into the draft. And now we're going to talk a little bit more about the draft and maybe not so much worry about whether guys are going to sign or not. I think for the most part, teams do their homework. They're going to sign these players for the most part. And they'll swing and miss on a couple just like every team does. But for the most part, they'll be planned on. You know, these things are smarter than you think. They've done their homework for going on a year and a half on some of these players now. So I don't think people should be shocked that they did this. They had a good plan going in place. And I'm pretty happy with what they pulled off, even though they're not all signed, even though there's no guarantee that they're going to lead to a World Series, even though they didn't pick Jack Leiter. So I brought a couple of people that I really, really love to talk to, especially about prospects in, and one of them is our good friend Graves. She's back with us. Say hello, Graves.
Hello, everybody. It's great to be back. And let's go Bucks. Let's have a fun time talking baseball.
And then my other best friend, I would say, Craig Toth, co-editor over at Inside the Bucks Basement. And he's my draft guru. Had to have him on the show. The guy's going to go nuts today because, you know, I think in the back of his head, at least, he kind of agreed with some of the naysayers a little bit. So, Craig, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, and it's great to be back on with you and Graves and talking some prospects, talking some draft. Definitely going to be a fun time.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's dig right in, right? The draft was, I think, by all accounts, and Jim Callis certainly raved about it, was a roaring success. Now, I think that you're allowed to say that without acknowledging that the sky could also fall, right? So, Craig, I'm going to start with you. Your first inclination was, hey, I understand what they did here, but calm down, right?
yeah, that was like one of my big things here is that I'm a big proponent of until they sign, you never know what's going to happen because the draft, I think that a lot of times now you're grading when I see these grades and how well the draft was, I almost give it a grade in the back of my mind as to how well the Pirates executed the plan that they wanted to, you know, that they went into the draft with. So okay. For me, it's almost like, okay, their goal, it seemed to be almost from the beginning that they were going to try to sign somebody at the number one pick under slot, no matter who it would be. And, you know, just from all of the draft experts that I talked to, all the stuff that I read, there wasn't much of a difference between 1 to sometimes even 8 as far as, you know, who people thought was the best player. Of course, you know, Marcelo Meyer comes in towards the end and he's that person who comes in at number one, but also you have to remember that a lot of times the people that are doing those mocks and doing those lists for about the last month before the draft, it's a mix of where they think people are going to go and also where the person actually slots in. Now, there were some people that are saying that Marcelo, you know, Meyer was the best person in the draft.
Yeah.
And the best player. But for me, I mean, it was razor thin. And I like what they did. You know, me and you got into it a little bit, Gary, on Twitter. We had a little bit of a back and forth.
No, not
about
us.
Some of the players. As far as it went, he went very, quote unquote, safe with the first pick and then took a bunch of high school guys. then went a bunch of four-year seniors and juniors who really don't have many options other than, you know, taking the money whatever they're offered.
You made a really good point, though, earlier when you were talking about those prospect lists. And Graves, I'll go to you on this one because people put a lot of faith in those, like they're written in red, you know. They're not gospel, for one thing. They are a mixture of some of them are exactly what they should be. They're lists of prospects in the order that you believe they are ranked. But a lot of them are prediction pieces where they're predicting who's going to get picked where. And that's confusing for a lot of people. And, you know, you've seen a lot of those lists too. And how do you differentiate? Because they don't make that very clear in some of those, right?
No, very true. But looking down across the list, you know, the first, you know, six or seven that we drafted, to me, and it kind of speaks to something the Pirates were looking to add. They want a team of athletes. And somebody might say, well, of course they're athletes, you know, they play sports. But what I'm talking about is being able to play multiple positions, you know. Couple of these guys play a couple of different sports. So, I mean, they're very talented. And yeah. And to just, yeah, you know, if you've got a list of players and you know, this is who we want and down and down and down the line, it's not always that simple to go that route. I mean,
it's a common theme. You've got other teams like Kanan Smith and Jigba, right? That's a two sport right. athlete, right? I mean, and
exactly.
Not to give people nightmares, but Anthony Alford. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of players.
There you
like
go. That. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the Pirates did really well. They went in with a purpose, and Craig touched on it too. You know, the first five, it was kind of a coin flip, you know, who should have been taken number one. And the one thing that stands out to me about Henry Davis, I think he's a fighter. He wants to win. He has an intensity, and I think he's going to be able to bring that to the team. And he has some leadership qualities that I really like. You know, just from things that I've read, articles that I've read, things that I've heard. I like the makeup, and the Pirates, I think, have known him for like 3 years. So yeah. They know what they're getting. And with the first pick being such a coin toss, I think they went a little bit with familiarity. You know, they really liked this kid, and that's who they ended up going with. And yeah, knowing I mean, that they'll, you know, hope we'll be able to sign him.
All in all, I think that they had a plan, and I think they surgically executed it. Now, whether it works or not, that's a whole other animal. You know, you're right. They have to sign them. You're right. They have to develop them. You're right. They have to, you know, make an impact up here. I'm not convinced that really any of them are going to contribute anytime soon besides Henry Davis.
Right.
But even he is probably 2-3 years away, right? So it's worth getting excited about. It's not worth losing your mind about. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that they revolutionized the system in one draft. I just don't think so. I think if he didn't lay the foundation that he did with the trades last year, I don't think it looks as sweet as it does right now, to be honest. Right. I think a lot of people would be pretty upset we didn't get anybody that was going to help anytime soon. You know, I think a lot of the moves that he made kind of laid the foundation for being able to do this. So the draft, to me, I'm done with it till they start signing people and I start hearing where they place them. I'm good. I like what they did. I'm happy about it. Cool. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to start talking about a little bit more about the second half and what we can look for. A podcast after all if we don't give you some predictions to hold us over the fire with, right? So we have to talk a little bit about what's going to happen in the second half, and and what we can expect. And I guess, you know, we're at our core, we're Pirates fans. So I should probably be predicting the sky's going to fall and a giant chasm is going to open in center field and just swallow Brian Reynolds whole. And, you know, who knows what else terrible can happen this year. But I mean, besides like the obvious, like, oh, Adam Frazier's going to get traded or whatever. Let's talk more about like how many people are going to get traded. What kind of things are we actually anticipating happening? Who do you see coming up? What types of things are you looking for most this half of the season? Not necessarily what you want to see, what you think you'll see. Graves, let's go ahead and start with you.
Well, I think I really honestly believe as far as trades go, I don't believe we're going to see very many. You know, anywhere between, you know, 1 to 3 is my prediction. You know, there's some talk now about Tyler Anderson going to the Mets. You know, that's something that could happen. Adam yeah. Frazier's out there. Rich Rodriguez. Those are the three that I'm really looking at, you know, as far as on the current 40-man roster that are going to be moved. And I don't see there just being a lot of movement because there's nobody really ready to come up and replace them. So,
right.
It's going to be interesting, to see what Ben does and his staff decides to do. But I'm really not expecting a whole lot of movement.
I mean, from the major league roster, I think, you know, you have the watches, you have Frazier, you got maybe Chad Cole, but I can't see a contender being like, oh yeah, I got to have Chad Cole on my team. I mean, like, I really need somebody that's going to come in every fifth day and walk a couple guys and lose his mind. I can't see that. I really can't. And I can't see anybody sticking him in the back.
Well, I will say the only thing that gives me with Chad Cole as a possibility is a team that's always shown interest in him, the Braves, possibly have become quote unquote buyers at this point in time.
You think?
Well,
after Acuna injury?
Well, they just got Jock Peterson. For me, I see them as seeing what happens here. And for some reason, they've had like a very strange obsession with Chad Cool. And I can see it as far as the, I guess it would be the potential or if he's pitching well, what they would get from him. But yeah, so that's the only way I would say that. And that's just like kind of like half sarcastic and half joking to a degree. But I think Graves nailed it. She said 1 to 3. If I was Vegas and I was setting those odds,
yeah,
I would set them at 2.5 and let people decide whether it's going to be, you know, 2 or 3. Do you know what I mean? And fight over that.
I do. And this isn't a Braves show, but I want to argue about something. So let's argue about the Braves real quick. Because Jock Peterson, okay, he's their replacement for Marcelo Zuna.
Yes.
Not their replacement for Acuna. And he's signed through next year, so he's an answer for them next year when they hope Soroka and Acuna are okay, right? I don't necessarily see them as buyers this year. I don't think they're that stupid. But, hey, now I could be wrong. Maybe Peterson will go down there and start hitting like Acuna in the launching pad. But I don't know.
They're hoping for Kyle Schwarber-esque production
Maybe they should have gone and got Kyle Schwarber then.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, Jock, he's been known to get on his streaks, and he wasn't playing well. And maybe if he gets in there, I think they're at least testing the waters this year. I don't think that they're absolute buyers. I think that it's if they can stay competitive, just because I don't really see a team within that division that is going to run away with it.
No, they all stink. You're right.
Yeah.
Even the Mets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now back to the Pirates, because that's what people really care about, right? I mean, they're definitely the better of those teams, right? But the I mean, at least when they play head to head in PNC, they were.
Yeah.
The Pirates, though, I don't see a whole lot of movement from the major league team. I think they might make some minor league deals, though. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think they have some players that they're not using down there that they might send out for next to nothing. I actually regret the fact that Major League Baseball has taken away the ability to trade for like international pool space right now, because I think they could probably swing an awful lot of deals to help out that 40-man problem. And I don't see you getting anything that you want back. I think you're going to get maybe some cash consideration type deals, which, you know, always make the Pirates look bad, even though they make total sense if you're really just trying to eliminate space, right? But what, besides trades, what else are we looking forward to next year? I mean, Craig, anything that, or the rest of the year, not next year. I'm already like looking forward.
You've the already rest, bypassed.
Yeah, that. I'm like, let's get past this one and move on to the next one, right? But like the end of the year here, what else do you see besides trades here? What are you looking for?
I'm looking for an evaluation of, and hopefully a reset for JT Brubaker to what he was at the beginning of the year. He had a pretty tough last few outings, but he hasn't actually looked a ton different than he had previously. I feel like that there may be some minor adjustments, but for the most part, it kind of feels, I don't know, almost maybe teams are figuring him out a little bit.
Let's talk about Brubaker a little bit, though. I mean, and we'll throw this to Graves, because I think you and I both chat about Brubaker a lot, and I'm right with you on that. I'd love to see him come back, but Graves, I've always kind of come to the belief that when a pitcher comes up and they start throwing in the strike zone right away, it almost takes batters aback. They're like, wait a minute, what's going on? This guy's up 0-2 on me. He threw two balls over the plate. Now they know he's scouted. They're ready to swing.
Right.
Nobody's getting deep on Brubaker anymore, because they're up there ready to hack right away. I mean, what are you seeing with him?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, the batters have they've made adjustments. They're ready to swing, and so now it's going to be up to JT to make some adjustments right back and be able to be dominant like he was earlier in the season. And I mean, that's kind of the name of the game. You know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, they're going to catch up to you, and they're going to, you know, be able to pound you into the ground. So you've got to be able to make adjustments, and that's all part of the growing and maturing as a pitcher, as a player. You can't, going back to one of the first things I ever said on the podcast many months ago, it's, you know, the competition didn't end at spring training, and whether you make it to the major leagues or, you know, you've been in the major leagues for 5 years, you're always having to learn and develop and continue that process. So I still have a lot of faith in JT Brubaker. I really like his demeanor on the mound. He has that, you know, that same fight that I talked about with Henry Davis, and I look for him to have a strong second half. I think he gets the start on Sunday and against DeGrom, and I'm excited to see that matchup, to see what that's gonna look like facing a top pitcher like DeGrom.
I gotta say, Graves is really becoming a podcasting expert, because that segue was absolutely spot on. My next point for what I'm looking for in the next half is who the competition is over for. And I would say Ky Tom is my number one guy that I don't want to see compete anymore. I want to be done with him. I do. And I'm ready to call it quits on Eric Gonzalez too. I want Rodolfo Castro to fill that role. I'm done. I don't need to see him anymore. I don't. Craig, what about you? Anybody you're just flat out done with?
I mean, it's pretty much, it's Tom. It's, I mean, is Fowler still down at AAA? Like, can we ship him out at some point? I'm done with Cole Tucker, man.
I know Graves is too.
I can't make excuses for him anymore. Yes. When people said, well, he needs these at bats, he needs individualized, you know, help from John Nunnally down in Florida. He's been with the Indians with John Nunnally, who's, you know, this hitting guru, which I love John Nunnally, but he can't put any of the stuff that he learns into practice, and honestly automatically falls back into there. And
yeah,
as you saw, I think Graves actually even commented when I had written the article on Cole Tucker for our site, Gary, she was just like, I didn't realize the number. I knew the numbers weren't great for defense for Cole Tucker, but she goes, I didn't realize they were that bad.
Right.
I think it was either Graves or Jim or maybe
I think
both.
I think it was yeah. Scott. Yeah.
Or Scott or somebody. It was somebody in that conversation.
Our buddy Scott Nelson. He decided
that's who it was. I knew it was somebody. Cause
he decided he was going to go on a campaign to save Cole Tucker. And you know, all of us have been just dumping on him for a week.
I knew
now,
it was somebody that was in that thread. I couldn't remember who was in that thread, but it was just like, man, it just isn't coming together for him. And at this point in time, with what you wrote about, Gary, with like the 40 man and stuff, like, I just don't know how you can justify him being on the 40 man another year.
Yeah, right.
If he figures it out someplace else, good for him. Like, I like the guy. That would be
great,
but I just don't know if he's going to figure it out here.
Well, let's talk about another prospect then that we've started to see a little bit from, and I'd really like to kind of use the second half of this year to make some decisions on, and that would be Jared Oliva. I mean, what have you seen from him? I like the kid in general. I'm not sure I've seen enough in the majors or even AAA really to justify saying, going into 2022, that I can say, yes, Jared Oliva should be penciled in. He's one of the four. I mean, Graves, where are you at on him?
Yeah, and he's definitely one guy I can point to at injuries. He missed so much of this season with his injuries. I like the young man as well. I think he is talented, but I definitely need to see more. It's too early to make any type of decision on him. Going into next year, I would like him to, you know, get some more regular playing time. Let's see what he can do here in the last few months of the season, and maybe make a decision then, because going back to Cole Tucker, he spent time in Florida. So did Jared Oliva. You know,
yeah, right.
And we've not really seen anything from either one of them yet. So that makes me kind of question, are they going to be both on the outs with the organization, just like Will Craig and Kevin Kramer?
All right. So Craig, you know, earmuffs for your kid if he listens to the podcast, you know, because I know it's a player, but you know, I think, you know, the same thing. Jared Oliva hasn't really shown anything, but then again, if you're only going to play him once or twice a week, what are you going to see?
I think,
take full advantage of Polanco being out. And mm-hmm. Speaking of Polanco, does Polanco ever come back? Let's be honest. Should he?
No. The hip inflammation. Here's my thing. He's just a watch at this point in time. I mean, I love the guy's energy, especially in spring training. The interviews with him, like I said before, I think maybe one of the last times I was on here, or maybe I was just talking to you, Gary, on the phone. I don't even remember. It was basically when he came out and he hugged, Will Craig after he hit a home run.
Yeah.
I do love the guy's energy, but I feel like he's gotten to the point right now that his body is just letting him down. And I just think that, you know, there's no arm there anymore.
I agree.
The way that he swings so loopy, but also like he swings hard, so violent. Is the twisting, I just think that at this point in time, I don't know if we'll see him again. And to go back to Oliva, I think that one of the biggest things that hurt him was this layoff last year. He turned the corner in Double A back in 2019, probably around like June 1st, and just hit fire. And then he went out to the Arizona Fall League and, you know, stayed on fire. And then when 2020, when you didn't have the minor league season to get those regular bats and to get, you know, just different looks and different at bats. And they said they didn't have enough guys to have the alt site to run, you know, full games, and they had coaches out in the out, you know, there was just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. And then especially with what Graves said, I mean, that the injury that he suffered, you know, right after going down to Florida and then having to sit out, I mean, that might just be maybe even not the end, but maybe his time on the 40 man for right now. Cause I couldn't see too many teams. Unfortunately, I mean, I love the kid. I love his heart. I love how he plays the game. I just think he's a good ball player, but I wouldn't see too many teams if he was happened to be DFA'd that would take, you know, too much of a shot on him. I mean, surprisingly, like, you know, like a Wilmer Defoe went through DFA and made it through waivers the first time. And I thought maybe I was almost guaranteed that somebody was going to scoop him up with his pinch hitting ability and with his, you know, flexibility to play a bunch of different positions and stuff. So I couldn't see them trying to pick up, you know, all of them. He may just need to, I don't know, just marinate, hopefully get a full year of AAA next year or something. And I don't know.
The thing is, he's getting a little, I mean, much like Cole Tucker, getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're getting into Bly Madris territory and Chris Sharp territory. And you got Cal Mitchell coming up, you know, Smith and Jigba coming up. You got, you know, Masia, like they just pulled up for like out of nowhere from single A, which, and does anybody understand that? I mean, we've watched some players like Mason Martin just crushing the ball, and yeah, his walk rate's not great right now, but I mean, he's crushing the ball and he's still in double A, but we pulled an outfielder up from single A, and granted he's hitting. I have no complaints. They saw something, but what are they actually doing there? And I think that's what we're going to talk about a little bit more in the next segment. We're going to start talking about, has the development already shown signs of improving? Can we actually say that already? Let's take a quick break. You know, as the show continues to develop, so do the Pirates. We have to figure out whether Ben Cherington has actually changed this development system enough to impact the team. And it's really awesome to see all the prospects come in, but as everybody reminds every optimist, well, they have to develop them, and this team can't develop, right? Which, you know, I think is an unfair statement because they've changed everything with the development system. So I at least need to see that. And I already feel like I'm starting to see some signs that they are. I'm seeing things that they've said they're targeting actually start to bear fruit. I'm seeing some other instances where it's not so much. Like Mason Martin, they wanted him to take more walks, strike out less. I'm seeing a few more home runs, and he's still got a walk and K ratio way out of whack. But I'm seeing Rodolfo Castro, who they wanted to take more professional at bats, come up to the majors, start taking some walks, taking some good swings on balls, and from both sides of the plate, which he hadn't done. And Craig, you were the one that pointed out to me that Rodolfo Castro, one of his problems was in-game switching from side to side. So yeah. I'm not seeing that right now, at least in the majors. And I didn't see it at double A either. I saw a guy who's handling the bat pretty consistently from both sides of the plate. And he looks like he can handle defensively a lot of different positions. I call that development. Now, what say you guys? Because I don't think we've seen a ton of evidence yet. And we just discussed how, you know, Jared Oliva and Cole Tucker certainly didn't benefit. So kind of a mixed bag so far, right? I mean, Graves, let's start with you. What are you seeing on the development front?
Well, I remind everybody that it's a slow process. And I think we are seeing some signs of development and also in how we're going about it. You know, we have the lab work and we have, you know, sending the players down to Florida for the, you know, to do, get some extra development one-on-one. Those are all new things that, you know, Ben has kind of initiated and got rolling. I mean, different camera work and, you know, looking at bullpen sessions. And I mean, I could go on and on. So I think even if we can't look at every player and say, oh, well, he's doing this, and he's improving, we can look at the overall process. And I think the overall process will lead us to see that there is development going on and it is positive development. And we are seeing it with players like Castro coming up here. I think he looks very confident at the plate and has a good approach and he doesn't seem to be intimidated by the situation. You know, taking right. a big jump from double A to Major League Baseball. I mean, that could, really shocked some people, and I think he's handled it very well.
Well, you know where I'm at on some of the development. Like, I feel like the stars are where your development needs to shine the most, right? So right now, and Craig, I'll go back to you on this one after I make a couple points here. I think we've seen Ke'Bryan Hayes kind of take a little bit of a step back, right? And this is after, you know, Nunnally worked with him last year to kind of fine-tune his swing a little bit. I think the league has pushed back a little bit. He's fighting through it. I do see him continuing to put good swings on balls, but he's also, you can tell, getting taken inside a little bit and just doesn't quite know how to handle it, right? So that's part of development is learning how to adjust to the league, right? But then you have a pitcher like Mitch Keller. Yeah, all the talent in the world. I guess you can call him a head case. I think that's maybe a little lazy. I think there's no movement on his fastball. That's coaching. That's development. If he goes down and Hanrahan fixes him, what does that say about Maron and Hanrahan? Do we give Maron credit for Hanrahan executing his plan, or do we give Hanrahan credit for coaching up a player? Or is it both? Is it a team effort, Craig?
I think with that one, which because Keller's one of the guys that I had pulled up here, because, you know, we were talking about development before this, and with Keller, everybody gives, you know, Ray Searidge and Uncle Ray a bunch of crap about stuff, but pretty much I look across the board in 2019 when Keller came up. Yeah. There was, you know, that crazy ERA to, you know, FIP, and everybody's saying, well, it shouldn't have been as bad as it was. But what I looked at was his K rate sitting above 12, his walk rate sitting right around 3, which is pretty much where it sits all the time. And then, you know, over the past 2 years where they were saying, you know, well, he needs to, his fastball plays more up in the zone. This is where it needs to play. And this is how he needs to throw it. And he needs to attack batters more. And both times I see the K rates drop and the walk rates absolutely balloon. So I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's confidence. I don't know what it is.
One thing, if you're telling a guy that he has to throw his fastball high to get strikes, right? Okay, well, it's a completely different plane as a hitter. One's coming in high, one's coming in low. You spit on everything low and let him walk you, and you swing out of your shoes on everything up. Yeah. Because you know it's going to be a fastball, right? Well, that's why I was worried about him going back to AAA, because, yeah, his numbers are going to be fine. I keep seeing these reports. Oh, he's fine, he's fine. He's doing pretty good. He's showing improvement. He is showing improvement. But if you actually watch him, and I was lucky enough to actually watch a couple of his games, the last two, I'm seeing him look like exactly the same pitcher. I really am. I'm seeing him getting swinging strikeouts on a curveball or a slider, whatever he's calling it, because you can't really tell. It's more of a swerve. And it drops 6 inches in front of the plate. The guy swings out of his shoes and misses it. That's not going to happen in the majors. He's going to walk that guy in the majors. That's, to me, that's what's scary about having him down in AAA is I'm not sure he's actually learning. And if he's going to come back up here and do that again, I'm going to have some questions about the development tactics, right? I mean, how many times do you keep telling him to do something without realizing that with his arm action, he has got to have some movement on that fastball? You cannot throw that thing in there straight. I don't care if it's at your eyes, your ears, your feet. They're going to hit it. These are professional hitters, right? So that's a development failure to me if they don't make Mitch Keller into something. And it's the only player that I think Bob Nutting has been on record as saying he didn't, that he felt was important. and I say that because he doesn't often talk about baseball, but yeah, he specifically said he didn't ever want to see another Tyler Glasnow. That's what Mitch Keller is. So if they don't make something of Mitch Keller, I'm sorry, right, that's a failure. Somebody's got to go, right? If we're going to get back to accountability, we're not going to sit here and stew on it for 6 years and keep pounding our heads against the wall. We're going to call it quits when we see failures. They should be somebody held accountable if they don't manage to turn Mitch Keller around, right?
Well, I think that, I mean, the crazy part for me thinking about all of this is, you know, we're talking about Hanrahan, who's moved up through the system extremely fast. He's gone pretty much as followed a route of promotion that would be like every single year he's gone up one level. And I think that, you know, I think Oscar Marine's job may be on the line. And then, I mean, Gary, you had written before about Eckstein, because with Eckstein, is there any player like that I can see now that those improvements have come, you know, through him? Like Brian Reynolds always hit. Kevin, you know, was Adam Frazier's become more consistent, but he's become,
he's mature.
Pretty much.
He's mature.
Yeah. So there's really no difference there. And then the credit for Ke'Bryan Hayes has gone to John Nunnally and Ke'Bryan Hayes. Like those are the two guys that have done the most there. So, I mean, that's where, I mean, I could see at some point in time, they might just say, hey, these guys in AAA are doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. Well, I don't want Graves to have an aneurysm here, because I know that she is very firm that like the plans are coming from the top level. So I want to give her an opportunity to say why Eckstein and Marine aren't on the hot seat. And I think you're the best person to speak to that, because I'm certainly not going to defend either of them right now.
Well, to me, it's still too early. The same with Derek Shelton. I'm not going to start really judging him or saying that, hey, he needs to be fired. I don't think anybody deserves to be on the hot seat right now. Let's get through this season. Let's get hopefully through this COVID thing. And
well, we're not in New York, so
next
we're okay.
Season in 2022, we are. You're right. So, but I'm really hoping that, you know, next year we're going to start seeing the steps and the progress that we're wanting to see. I know we can, Brian Reynolds really well, Kevin Newman's taking a step back, but my focus isn't really at the major league level right now. I'm looking down further down in the organization, and everything that goes on there is coming from Marine or Rick Eckstein. So they're part of the process. I think part of it is the talent. You know, we've got some really talented young men down there in the low minors, and I think that's good. That's going to make the difference. So I'm not ready to judge. I'm not ready to put anybody on the stake, and let's just sit back and enjoy some baseball, and we'll see some real progress next year.
Right. Well, if we're going to go down the line, I'm just going to say it right now, because a lot of people do. Unfortunately, and I know Graves and I know Gary do not do this. I know that you guys, you know, actually look beyond, you know, those 20-second highlights that you see from, you know, the grasshoppers, the curve. I mean, we all love those. We all follow those. We all do whatever. Most people would probably think at this point in time that Nick Gonzalez is doing awesome, that he is doing great. Cause it's like, we came back and he hit a home run. He came back and he look at him, how hard he hit the ball, but then you don't see him for a while. And it's like,
so well, he's why not, didn't you... he's not hashtag you're ready.
No, he is hashtag K-ing 34.1% of the time. He has a WRC 3, which is below, he's hitting 214. And I know that there was an injury in there. And I know that is a partial piece of that setback, but I mean, I'm not going to say this just because I'm on, you know, a DK sports podcast. I remember Dayon saying back in spring training, even when Gonzalez was taking batting practice, man, he's missing a lot of these balls.
Yeah, right.
He just doesn't seem to have his timing down. Like, what's going on? And I remember him saying that. And I remember him writing about that. So there's one of the first ones right there for Ben Cherington and for like this whole regime to kind of almost be judged on to a degree is, I mean, everybody's talking about Henry Davis right now and how he's going to progress. I mean, that was his first round pick, you know? So you don't want to see those types of conversations being had about a Nick Gonzalez. I mean, we're talking about Mason Martin struggling. We talk about Mitch Keller struggling. We talk about all these other ones that were so integrated to a degree into the old way and the old things that are happening. He's the first one that you would point to that was, hey, this was our selection. This is our, you know, responsibility from the word go, and he was the alt site last year.
Yeah. So it's like, let's be honest too. He's supposed to be the star, right? Yeah. I mean, and you know, Leovar Pagrero is another one that, you know, he's batting 220, right? You know, these guys have very high ceilings. And what do you always tell me, Craig? You pay a lot more attention to their floors than you do their ceilings, because the floors are going to be much more achievable 9 times out of 10, right?
Yeah. So, I mean,
that doesn't mean that you can't shoot for the stars. It just means that maybe you don't expect the stars. And with Nick Gonzalez, it's really hard for me to do too much there. Coming off of really not playing for over a year, it's hard for me to completely judge him right now and say, oh, this is a devastation of the development system or whatever. But, you know, let's be honest, he's lost his opportunity to get bumped up to AA this year. That's not going to happen. And I knew that as soon as he got injured, despite being yelled at on Twitter that I was crazy. But he's not going to get bumped up this year, and he shouldn't. Right. So, I mean, he's not going to start for this team in 2022. He's not going to be a locked on starter in 2023. I think if anything you can take from this year, they have a ton of awesome prospects with an awful lot of potential. But every time you scratch in a lineup for a couple years down the road, at least practice a little bit of caution. At least understand there's a few players you're not thinking about. At least realize there's a guy like Rodolfo Castro that maybe sneaks into the conversation and isn't going to give up his position all that easily. You know, they're you're going to run into guys on the way, and development comes in different stages for everybody. Maybe this Macias guy they put, I literally had only heard of him. I hadn't even been paying any attention to him. There he is, up in AAA. And like, it's crazy the way that they promoted him. So there's a lot of guys like that, like Matthew Frazier, we've been watching from single A for how long? How has he not been promoted? Well, you have to think there must be something there that they're seeing that isn't going to fly at the next level, or they think is going to get exposed at the next level. But, you know,
development. What are you talking about, Gary? I thought that Ben Cherington was going to fly everybody through the system. Boom, boom, boom. That's what he does.
Well, see, that's what I heard. That's what I heard. But see, I'm yet to see it in at least applied.
Yes.
At least applied specifically. I'm not seeing it like as an across the board thing. I'm seeing it targeted here and there. Like Rodolfo Castro can skip an entire, you know, league. But Mason Martin has to stay in Double A. You know, now to be honest, we talk about the K rate and everything. I don't think Mason Martin's going to learn anything else in Double A. I don't think if you sit there and wait for that K rate to fix itself, that it's ever going to happen. You may have to realize that's something that he's always going to struggle with. And maybe those 30 home runs that he could hit in the majors are worth it. There's a place for that too. I've met Joey Gallo. Have you? You know, like, you need players like that, right? You need Rob Deers. You need people that can hit a lot of home runs in the middle of this lineup. So maybe move him up to AAA. Maybe hope that the walks kind of die down as the pitching gets better in a way, because, you know, the pitchers are forced to go into the zone a little bit more. Maybe his impatience will play a little bit better as he gets a little bit further along. The pitching gets more consistent. The eye gets more consistent. That happens for a lot of guys as they move up. You know, Kyle Schwarber was a strikeout master when he started. He struck out at least two out of every three times he came up. And then he started making contact. His eye got better throughout the years. You know, now he's a 10-year vet, bombing home runs like every day. I think they maybe need to be a little less patient with somebody like him or Cal Mitchell. Move them up, because we need some of those prospects to start getting closer. Any thoughts on that? Nope.
I think if you threw it to me, I'm here. I was a little bit, the connection was a little lagging. I think one reason why he had, was just because of injuries there at AAA and others being promoted and everything else. So I think that's pretty cool that he jumped two levels, but I also remember Connor Cox started at AAA at the beginning of the season. So I'm not sure where he's at right now. So I don't get too necessarily worried or worked up or have put too much thought into that. But I would love to see Mason Martin moved up. Let's see, kind of give him a different pitchers to look at and move him up, give him some confidence and see where it takes us. Because you call him up doesn't mean he has to stay. So I'm looking forward to the second half and seeing where the team takes us.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to call him up soon, if for nothing else, that you have to make the 40-man decision at the end of the year. I'd rather know that that I want to protect him and have him a step away from Major League Baseball than two levels away and know I have to protect him. So,
well, that's what I was going to say. It's I think it's, Gary, that's exactly what I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth, brother. It's like, he was at Greensboro, he's 23, and he's Rule 5 eligible and you know, coming up here in December. Would it really show you in Double A what he could do? Why not bring him up to Triple A, and especially with, you know, I mean, that might have been Cruz's move up there, but he's injured.
Right.
You probably already know what you're doing. I think Smith and Jigba's up in 2021 this year. I'd have to look at my spreadsheet, but I believe he is.
Yep.
You probably already know you're keeping him and can move him along at whatever pace. So it could have been like, hey, here's the opportunity to see whether or not this kid can fly, which is what we've kind of talked about with, you know, Max Kranich and Rodolfo Castro getting some time at the major leagues, whether it's, you know, an extended look or just even these little cups of coffee to say, hey, are these guys, did we make the right decision? Because when Charrington came in, you know, right away, he had to make those decisions, and he protected Will Craig,
right,
who is now in Asia. You know, there's certain decisions that it's like, okay, did I make the right call? We need to see, because of all the other decisions we have to make. And otherwise, maybe they saw something in him, because, I mean, he was tearing the cover off the ball in Greensboro, which is something he really hadn't done since. I mean, he played okay back in 2019. I mean, he wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. but it wasn't something we had seen since like 2018 when he had to repeat it.
He's moved along, and I think he's come full circle. He's at least back to where he was. Let's keep it moving, right? I mean, speaking of keep it moving, boy, I've kept you guys a long time tonight. it's time to go ahead and call it a show. But really, really great conversation as always. And I'd like to thank both of my guests. First, we'll start with Graves. How do people get a hold of you if they'd like to talk?
Thanks, Gary. Hey, this is Voice from the Graves. You can follow me on Twitter at KG_55VFTG. And let's go Bucks.
All right. And my big back, Krager. How you doing, buddy? How do people get a hold of you?
Inside the Bucks basement. Read mine and Gary's stuff. At Bucks Basement on Twitter. Bucks in the Basement comes out on any podcast format every Tuesday morning. And if you want to find me on Facebook, actually probably don't, because I won't go on there because it's accessible.
I spend too much time on Facebook because I still feel obligated to answer people's questions. So you can just look up my name, Gary Morgan, on Facebook if you want. Twitter, GaryMO2007. This podcast comes out every Saturday night for now, although I've been told we may be going through a schedule change at some point here. You know, not to break news on DK, let him do that, but we're going to be moving some things around. And obviously my work over at Inside the Bucks Basement, check that out too. Hit me up anytime. Love to talk baseball all the time. And-